The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Hey, the second hour is live. We thank all of you for being here, and I'm sure if almost all of you were paying a lot more attention to the women's Final Four last weekend than ever before. The ratings have supported that, and it all happened at a very, very good time with the rights fees up in the air. Amanda Krstovich has been covering that for Front Office Sports. Amanda, thank you, first of all, for making time for us today. Good afternoon, and we look forward to visiting with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
It's our pleasure. Let's set the scene. Sometimes things work out and sometimes they don't, but for the future of women's sports, this could not have gone any better. Tell us where they are and what it looks like down the road.
Absolutely. So I pulled some numbers for you just to compare how the women's Final Four matched up against some of our other favorite events. It got more viewers than the Sugar Bowl, the Orange Bowl, and the Cotton Bowl. It got more viewers than any Major League Soccer game, any Stanley Cup game since like the 1970s. And it even topped the average for Thursday night football. So the women's championship game in particular is now considered, as one of my sources said, in the upper echelon of sports media rights. And this is part of a growing trend. The women's Final Four, the championship game, the entirety of March Madness has been exponentially increasing from a rating standpoint for the past several years. This is obviously the biggest increase. But it, as you said, it couldn't have come at a better time because the NCAA is going to be renegotiating its media rights contract with ESPN, you know, during this offseason.
Amanda, a couple of things were interesting to me. You know, it was on ABC, which should be a slight help, not automatic, but it's on some more available homes. But in the past, the championship game has been in prime time. This year, it was not. Some wondered if it would hurt. It obviously did not. Do you know? I guess I could call my bosses and ask them the question, but and not ask you. But what's all that about?
Yeah. So what happened last year is there was the Major League Baseball season was pushed back. Right. So the first night of Sunday Night Baseball, there was a slot that ESPN had to fill. So they put the women's championship game in primetime. They didn't do that this year. Your bosses maybe have told me that, you know, it's a bit harder to get space in primetime on ABC, right? But that's what happened. I mean, look, I think if they put it in primetime, it would have garnered maybe even more viewers, maybe over 10 million. By the way, the Rose Bowl only got 10.2 million, right? So, you know, it certainly got more than Sunday Night Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I would be willing to bet, and I'm sure you could look it up, that Sunday night in prime time on ABC, they did not get 9 million people.
Yeah, I mean, Sunday Night Baseball in 2021, I believe, so even 2 years ago, got fewer viewers than the women's championship at that time.
Yeah, I mean, normally a Major League Baseball game, we're looking at, this is on ESPN, 2 million, you know, maybe 1.5 million people. I don't understand. I mean, I realize it seems like it's antiquated thinking, but that's part of this new agreement that's about to happen. Before we get to that, why are so many people watching women's basketball?
Yeah, I think that it's sort of a perfect storm. I think that folks in the women's basketball community have been talking for a really long time about sort of, you know, if you build it, they will come. Like if you put women's basketball on accessible television, there are lots of fans and all of the data supports this. The NCAA tournament also set a record for, you know, fans who went in person, right? I think that all of women's sports have been sort of ignored, right? I mean, how can you become a fan of a sport if it's not getting coverage, if you don't know about it, if you can't find it on TV? But now you can. Now there are outlets like ours and yours writing about it, covering it, putting it on the front page, putting it on linear television, and all the fans are there. And folks of basketball in general, of college sports in general, are starting to realize that this is just another sport that they can root for. You know, Angel Reese at LSU talked about how the LSU fans give her the Joe Burrow treatment, right? So, I mean, why not have another team to root for?
So what does it look like in relation to what happens next? I'm sure ESPN is going to be around. Is there anyone else?
Yeah, so we don't know exactly who the other bidders are going to be. Obviously, they're, you know, it's a very popular product at this point. You know, generally, the media rights contracts have like an exclusive negotiating window. And we know ESPN is interested. I don't need to tell you that just because of how much investment ESPN has put into creating more, you know, coverage around the women's tournament. But the new NCAA president, Charlie Baker, talked about how he wanted to test the market. So they've hired a consulting firm that's going to come in, try to evaluate what the deal should or could be worth. Also, they're going to try to evaluate whether or not the women's basketball tournament should be broken off from a media rights perspective from the other NCAA championships that are not men's basketball or obviously the college football playoff. And then, you know, they're going to take it to the market is what Charlie Baker said.
And I'm sure Charlie Baker probably had to be rubbing his hands together, thanking Jill Biden and Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and everyone else for turning a one-day story into an all-week conversation, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I was talking with someone the other day about, you know, the ironic thing about the controversy, you know, related to quote unquote taunting with Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark is that the two of them have gotten more followers on social media as a result of this conversation. They're going to be able to make money off of it because of NIL, you know, and Charlie Baker, I mean, look, it was his first month on the job. So in a way, I feel for him. He's got a lot to learn in a short amount of time. But he's going to be able to walk around and take credit for this women's tournament and its growth, you know, and negotiate for it at a time, you know, after many, many years of folks in the women's basketball community at the NCAA, at ESPN, doing their best to, you know, to make it the product that it is today.
Seems like, just 2 years ago, the women were being fed spam while the men were getting a filet. A lot has changed, hasn't it, Amanda? Thank you for joining us.
Absolutely.
Great to talk to you and great to hear your story. And we will hopefully talk to you again very, very soon. We head to the break. We've already had Hugh Freeze, Amanda, a couple of other guests. We'll talk about Georgia's situation with its schedule. Why is it so poor? And later on, the Archbishop on Good Friday.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
And we're back. Appreciate you being here. And let's get to the calls. And on this Good Friday, AC is up next.
Good afternoon, Mr. Feinbaum. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you.
Absolutely. It was a nice interview, Mr. Feinbaum. I loved it. This is the way how you conduct interviews. You should have my boy Mike Griffith of the Dalmatian. I love Mr. Mike Griffith. I love him too, just like I love you, Mr. Feinbaum. I have a question for you. You know, I'm looking forward to Mr. Arthur because I never heard that guy. I never heard a single segment. I'm looking forward to it at 6 p.m. Eastern time this evening. But Mr. Feinbaum, what does Good Friday mean to you? And what does Easter Sunday mean to you? I love everybody in the background, the cheerleaders. I love Mr. Feinbaum. I always get excited when I call the station left and right. I don't care how tough you guys. I welcome all the challenge. Let's face it, Mr. Feinbaum, nobody is going to match up to my energy. It's not a prediction. It's a spoiler. But, Mr. Feinbaum, I'll see you, God willing, on Monday. I love you. Holla!
We're all just pausing for a moment in silent prayer. Let's check out Expired up next. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Can I get back to you on that?
Who, me?
Yeah. May take me a while to recover from AC and the Mr. Feinbaum routine.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I can't define it. So anyways, let's go on to what I got to say. And since it's Good Friday and I'm Catholic, we're pretty solemn. And so I don't want to get in any discussions. I don't want to put nobody down. But I was watching the Masters earlier.
Yeah.
And I got four words for you, Paul. Okay, you ready? You ready?
I have to be ready. I'm here.
Okay, Paul. Well, before I get to those four words, my wife did say she will rub your head in Knoxville. But we can't celebrate that today. We'll celebrate that Sunday. So anyways, my four words to you, Paul. Sam Bennett. Giggle. Later.
Got it. Yeah, I thought AC did ask an important question though, and I'll bring this up later with the Archbishop. But holidays like this do affect people. Good Friday is certainly a day of reflection and thought, as the whole weekend is, and we'll talk to Archbishop Marino on the meaning of this holiday, which is so self-explanatory, but it is interpreted differently by many, many people. Let's continue with more phone calls here. And Jake is up next in California. Hello, Jake. Jake, you there? I'm willing to bet he's not. Anyway, you ever had one of those days? That seems to be my day today. We're going to talk to this guest in a few minutes about the Georgia schedule. And I want to talk about this for a second because it is being widely criticized. On surface, it is an embarrassing schedule. When I say that, I'm not talking about the conference games. Those are built in. You play Auburn is your normal conference game, and then the crossover game this year, which, let's see, who is it? It's going to be Ole Miss. It's the other game. So what's interesting about UT, Martin, nothing. Ball State, nothing. UAB and Georgia Tech. Well, what's interesting is Georgia always plays Georgia Tech. That game used to really matter. That was a game of significance. It's no longer a game of significance because Georgia Tech just does not have a program any longer. The important game is what you don't see there, and that's Oklahoma, because Oklahoma was on that schedule. And I just find it absurd that people are criticizing Georgia for the weak schedule when they put Oklahoma on there. Oklahoma, I mean, if you're an SEC team, and you're saying, and we're talking realistic here, and you may say, well, what about this school? What about that? Some schools are not realistic. You don't see many Ohio State, Georgia games or Michigan. You have. I mean, Michigan played Alabama about 10 years ago in Dallas. They played Florida a couple of years ago. But most of the time, you have to go find games where you can. And if you're coming up with a list of, who would be on your absolute, you have to have on your schedule list, Oklahoma would be one of those schools. So that's really a big deal. Who else is on that list? Notre Dame, obviously. Georgia's had Notre Dame on that, had a home and home. Clemson's on there. Georgia's had a couple of games against Clemson. So you always just have to be honest about it and realistic about it. Alabama has Texas this year. That's quite a home and home. And the one thing that you're getting now is these kickoff classics, the Chick-fil-A game. All these games are becoming very passe. I know Tennessee is playing a couple of them. They have, who do they have this year? Virginia. They have NC State next year. But these games are getting harder and harder to fill because fans are sick of them. We've been to countless games like that, and they're just, let's frankly, these neutral site games. Now, Tennessee versus Virginia in Nashville, there's something to that game. Why? Because it's in Nashville. It's a great chance for Tennessee to share, with a big base of theirs. But, Tennessee, a couple of years ago, I remember we did our show, Tennessee and West Virginia in Charlotte. What did that game mean? I mean, seriously. It's one thing for South Carolina to play in Charlotte. That's a geographical neighbor. It's good for business, but it wasn't really good for Tennessee to play in Charlotte. It's not that, I mean, it's a couple hours away, but it's not really an important area anymore. Schools are better off in the future, and I think you're seeing this, playing the home and home games. I mean, if you're a fan of Florida, I mean, you got this Utah game. It's weird, okay? But it was still a phenomenal game last year. It should have been the game that lifted Florida up into the outer space. But it didn't happen because they fell apart right afterwards. But if you're a Florida fan and you have not had hardly any road games in the future, this is a big deal. I mean, how many of you have been to Utah before? Most people have not. That is a game that if you're a Florida fan, you go, you know what, I think I'm going to go to that game. And that's really what this is about. I mean, the Texas-Alabama game last year in Austin wasn't a major event, just like it will be this year. I remember going to Norman about 15 years, 20 years ago now, and Alabama played out in Norman. That was really unique. And then the next year, Bob Stoops brought his team to Tuscaloosa. I mean, those are big deals I think too often, if you're an Alabama fan, do you really want to go to Atlanta again? What was the game there 2 years ago? Alabama played Miami. I mean, okay, but Miami still hasn't. Miami is in the 10th year of its we're back role. So that game didn't do much for me. The game last year, Georgia and Oregon, again, it was a really good game on paper, but it benefited Georgia. They played in Atlanta. But it's the games that I don't understand. A couple of years ago, somewhere about, you had Auburn and NC State in Atlanta. You had all these games, and Michigan and Florida and Dallas. We did SEC Nation from there, and quite frankly, nobody cared. It was just it wasn't the biggest game of the day. Somebody else was playing that day. I think it was, it was really a significant, I think it was Alabama and someone, maybe Southern Cal, and it just did not matter. My point is, the neutral site games are struggling. We've been to Atlanta enough times for those games, and you can see the angst on the faces of the executive directors of those deals because they're really struggling to fill these games up. So the non-conference games are becoming, the home and homes are becoming where it's at. And I think you'll see even more of those now with the college football playoff. Oh, yeah, it was Bama and Florida State that year. So that was a 1-3 game. Anyway, we're up against the break. Your phone calls continue here at 855-242-7285. We'll talk a little bit about that schedule that I was just referring to when we come back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
And we were talking about it a minute ago. What's up with the schedule? Kirby Smart bullish on lining up a challenging non-conference game. Of course, this year that did not happen. Let's talk about it. Mark Weiser joining us. Mark, thank you for the time. It's always good to have you back on the show. And we were talking about this a minute ago about this. If you look at this schedule, it looks terrible. We all know why. It's the Oklahoma game. So tell us about where we are and where we're going. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Paul. Good to be with you. You know, Georgia's always, I don't want to say always, Kirby's really wanted to schedule tough games, you know, looking forward. You know, he knew the playoff was going to expand at some point. Now that it's, you know, nearly here, you know, it's the fruition of it. But, you know, there's too many games that they have lined up in the future. They're going to have to, you know, cut back a little bit with some of the beefy schedule that they have. But he doesn't want to dial it back too much. You know, they got a lot of pushback from fans this year when they brought on Ball State to replace Oklahoma. Now, that Oklahoma State, the Oklahoma game was going to be in Norman, but, you know, the September schedule, I mean, it's tough to even look at on paper. But, you know, you don't need to play two Power 5 games outside the SEC if you have a 9-game schedule, but Kirby says he's going to.
What is on the schedule, and I'm assuming Georgia Tech stays, so what is on the schedule down the road?
Well, in 2024, they're supposed to open against Clemson in Mercedes-Benz in that Chick-fil-A game, the kickoff game. You know, in 2026, for instance, they have three Power Fives, UCLA, Louisville, and Georgia Tech. 2028, you have Texas, Florida State, and Georgia Tech. You know, 2030, Ohio State comes on for a home and home. So, you know, some of those games, you know, naturally are going to be going by the wayside. I mean, I don't think Georgia's going to want to fly out to Los Angeles to play UCLA, you know, probably come home and have a tough SEC game the next week, maybe. I don't know. You know, Georgia's been so successful in the non-conference, with the way they're recruiting, you know, maybe have a tougher schedule than others. They haven't lost a non-conference game since the Sugar Bowl in the 2018 season against Texas. Now, that streak includes, I think it's 17 straight now, Michigan, Ohio State, Clemson, Oregon, TCU, Notre Dame, Baylor, Cincinnati. Much of that in the postseason and the playoff, but that's still a pretty impressive streak they got going.
Talking to Mark Weiser. Mark, let's get to the practice field for a second here. And I know what's on the – I know what the conversation has been about the quarterback position, but encapsulate that and more for us in terms of what the feeling is so far in the spring.
Yeah, I mean, the quarterback's obviously going to be the big thing when they have the G-Day game next Saturday. They had to push up a scrimmage that was supposed to be tomorrow. They had it last night. I was told it was about an hour before more bad weather already came in. But, you know, they've been incorporating 21 newcomers, 18 early enrollees, three transfers, including some big-time wide receivers that are really going to help. Dominic Lovett came from Missouri, Wawa Thomas from Mississippi State. Georgia's always losing a lot of talent. I mean, you might have three first-rounders this year with Jalen Carter, Nolan Smith, Broderick Jones, but, you know, they just plug it in. I mean, they got the next guys waiting there and probably, you know, first-rounders, you know, for the next several years to come, multiple, this is the way they recruit. And the coaching staff, only lost Todd Monken to the NFL, so, you know, you have a national championship organization that is pretty much intact, under Kirby.
What does the quarterback situation look like? If you could break down, I mean, most people think they know who it is, but you're covering their team. What do you sense?
I think it's a legitimate fight between Carson Beck and Brock Vandegrift. You know, Beck still probably has the edge. He came in as the number one guy. It's going to be practice to practice, scrimmage to scrimmage. You know, I was told that yesterday was kind of a better day for the defense, but Beck might have had the edge over Vandegrift in terms of, you know, what they did in that scrimmage. I expected all along, and Kirby has said as much when he talked to Macon quarterback touchdown club, earlier a couple weeks back, that, you know, this isn't going to be decided, you know, at the end of the spring. This day and age, you really can't do that. I mean, one of these guys might jump in the portal if they think they're number two on the depth chart. And, you know, with the way the schedule is with South Carolina, the first SEC game after a couple of easy non-conference games, I mean, these guys both should be playing, you know, in September, early in the season. Maybe really it's not decided, until SEC play rolls around.
I want to ask you about that because I talked to a reporter at Alabama, and I got similar vibe. So my question is, how many games are being played within the game? And what I mean by that, Mark, is you can't really afford to get too much separation here unless it's obvious. And as long as it's close, is it the goal of the coach to keep it contained that way so you don't lose someone now or even before the season? One of the quarterbacks, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of an unspoken thing. I don't think Kirby's going to come out there and say that at a podium. I think both these guys are invested in the program, and or else they might have been gone already. I mean, Carson Beck is a total outlier in his fourth year and never having started a college game, as a guy that came in as a four-star quarterback. But I think both these guys legitimately could be starters at Georgia and certainly elsewhere. And, Georgia in the 2020 season, they went with Dorn Mathis as the starter, and Kirby had a quick trigger and put in Stetson Bennett behind him. Now, Bennett didn't hold on to the job the whole season, but, you know, at least he's shown that in that instance, you know, if a game was on the line, he's going to make a change. And I think both these guys, they have a little bit different skill set. I mean, Vandegrift's more of a run-pass threat. Beck more of a guy with the big arm. They both bring things that can really help Georgia, and they have so much talent around them that I don't think they're going to be asked to win the game solely by themselves, obviously.
Mark, on Beck, because he has been there, he's so ingrained in that program, in any question sounds crazy considering Stetson Bennett has been the starting quarterback in two national championships, but what is your thought just on what you've seen of him and what you're told by people who see him every day?
I mean, the thing with Carson is he really hasn't played meaningful snaps at Georgia, given the fact that between Stetson Bennett and JT Daniels, that's who they've gone with during this national championship march in season one and season two back-to-back. Now, Beck, you know, was seemingly the guy when JT Daniels had an injury, but Stetson Bennett had a better practice week from what Kirby Smart said, and Beck has just kind of been the good soldier coming in as the backup. They say he has total command of the offense. We'll see what happens when the lights are on and he's got to make winning plays. He showed well the time he did come in. He threw over 70% last season, got a chance to play in a national championship game. But it'll be a different deal when he's asked to be the guy from the get-go.
Mark, we talked about it last year, dealing with winning and then they did it again. How different do you think it will be, or do you think it will be fairly similar? As can't believe I'm even saying this question, but as Kirby Smart tries to win his third straight national championship.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a little bit different. You know, I think last year's team was, you know, we didn't think it would be as good as last year. And you know, I don't know if you had, there was a big question when I was at the NFL Combine, the players were being asked, you know, who would win the 2022 Georgia team or the 2021 team. And, you know, the 2022 team went unbeaten, but the 2021 team had the generational defense. So, you know, what will be the character, the DNA of this team, you know, that's remains to be seen. I think there will be, you know, some changes, obviously, offensively when you bring in Mike Bobo and Todd Monken. Certainly last year deserves a lot of credit for the way that offense really, you know, took advantage and was very creative with getting the ball in the playmaker's hands with Brock Bowers. And I think Mike Bobo obviously will try to do that as well when you have a special talent like him. But, you know, these teams find a way to kind of have their own personalities. And I'm not exactly sure at this point what that will be for this team. They have the same kind of core DNA that they always talk about, the same traits that they do through their skull sessions, which Kirby Smart's really big on in terms of small group meetings that they have internally. So, but talent-wise, I mean, there's nobody better on paper than Alabama, obviously, in the conversation.
Mark Wiesner with us. Mark, you know, the championship was on a Monday night, and it seemed within a week so much had changed with the tragedy that happened on the 15th and a lot of this, the noise since then. How would you describe these last 3 months in the world of Georgia football?
You know, there really wasn't much of an off season given what happened. You know, there was a lot of questions about, you know, the events of that night and scrutiny on the program. And Kirby Smart was very steadfast in, you know, saying that he had a strong culture, but some of the actions of and decisions made that night, you know, was just tragic, as we saw the loss of, you know, Devin Willock and Chandler LaCroy, and, you know, probably rallied the team together internally. But, you know, you wonder if it took away from, you know, the glow and the glory of that season, you know, and, you know, from a football standpoint, you know, I don't know what it did in terms of the preparation. I mean, clearly there was more important things for them to worry about than preparing for spring practice, you know, and there's scar tissue for a lot of these players who lost a really good friend and teammate.
Well done, Mark. Thank you very, very much. Mark Wiesner joining us talking about the Dogs. We'll take a break here. We have plenty of guests later on, and your phone calls right around the corner.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back. Let's grab some calls here. Cody is in California. Cody, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Great.
I want to talk about Anthony Richardson. All right.
Okay.
As a Gators fan here in California, you know, watch all the games. I think that the combine, it has blinded people severely. You know, he's an athletic dude. He's really athletic, but he doesn't have the skills that an actual quarterback needs. If the Panthers take him at one, I'm telling you, Paul,
first of all, explain this to me. I mean, use deductive logic. Why would the Panthers trade a first rounder, a second rounder, and their best wide receiver to get Anthony Richardson when they could have gotten him probably where they previously were? They wouldn't do it. He's not going there.
I think, but he could go to the Colts. He could have gone to the Colts. And then at 9, they wouldn't have got him.
Yeah, I mean, he might go. He might go after 3, but he's not going 1.
All right. But look, I think they should take CJ Stroud instead of Anthony Richardson. The combine, you know, it has blinded people so much. He is a project. He is not a first round pick at all to me. I also want to talk about Jay Kaner, quarterback of Fresno State. I think he is a sleeper. You heard of him, Paul?
Not much. I mean, I've heard the name. I don't know anything about him, though. Tell us.
Well, you know, pro comparison, Drew Brees. He is amazing. He throws it on a rope all the time. Perfect QB, has all the characteristics. You know, Paul, I think he's going to be the best QB that we get from this draft.
Very interesting. Cody, thank you. Appreciate it. DeWitt is calling next. Hello,
hey,
DeWitt.
Paul.
Hey there.
Hey, you had an interview earlier, and I was in and out, Paul, and I'm sorry if I'm taking her comments out of context. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but she said something about build it and they will come. Is she saying that, you know, if you just put it out there, people will watch? I don't think that's true, Paul. I'm just going to tell you why I watched the women's championship game. I mean, you had Iowa that upset a legendary coach in Dawn Staley in South Carolina, and I'm an SEC fan. And then you had Caitlin Clark that had two 40-point games, and the sports world promoted that. And then you got Kim Mulkey that's going to win another national championship in her second year. And then her flamboyant dress, that's the reason we watched. I mean, you can't just build it and come. You got to promote it, and you got to have great play. I mean, look at the WNBA.
Hold on. There's more to it than that, though. Women's college basketball has been ascending for a number of years, and you know, for whatever reason, I think some of it is star power. And it had nothing to do with LSU. It had everything to do with South Carolina and Iowa. And Caitlin Clark was the person everyone wanted to see because most had not seen much of her. And you know, how would she fare against the unbeatable South Carolina team? So what happened was they pulled the upset, and then the residual the next day was, well, let's watch this championship game. April Reese was well known. Angel Reese was well known in the SEC, but not beyond that too far.
No. I'm just telling you from my perspective. I mean, I didn't even know Angel Reese. I had no idea, but I did. I had heard the background on Kim Mulkey. I mean, so I did watch it because of the other side. And LSU, as I said, I'm an SEC fan.
What she's trying to say is that there was so much conversation, and the men's game was a complete dud. You have to leave your biases at home here, and I know that may be difficult for some, but you know the women's game.
I'm not biased. I didn't watch it because it was entertaining.
First of all, anybody that immediately denies an allegation when it's not directed at them tells me all I need to know. But that's not the point. The point being that it's the momentum after the game that is creating this big cloud that is enabling women's basketball to.
I'm not that guy.
Of course not.
I don't care about that. I mean, you got that in every sport. I'm just telling you why I watch the game. I can't speak to everybody else.
DeWitt, take a breath and answer the question. Why do you watch the game?
I watched it because you had an Iowa underdog.
No, I mean, tell me something you haven't already said, because you're really not convincing me that you're a legitimate fan. You called in with a premise, and you realize the premise didn't work. So now you're trying to reposition your position.
I'm sorry. I didn't call in with a premise. With a premise. I called in to say why I watched the game. I was just telling you why I wanted to tell you why I watched the game. In your interview with the young lady, and she said, and I was in and out. I may have taken her comments out of context. You can't just
Did you hear the interview or not?
I didn't hear all of it, to be fair.
Okay,
Paul.
If I could analyze this phone call, you basically called in with your mind made up, referencing an interview that you didn't hear. So would you agree with me or disagree that you really don't know what you're talking about?
I'm just giving an opinion, Paul. It's a caller-driven show. You can take calls if you want. You get to talk for 4 hours. I get, what, a minute and a half? So, I mean, if you want a caller-driven show, I'm a caller. So I'm just giving an opinion and trying to promote women's sports. They did a good job. I watched. But you can't just build it and they will come. You got to promote it. And you got to make it.
Dwayne, all I can do is thank you for your call and your service to mankind on this holiday.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.